This is the Horse Radio Network.
What a beautiful day for horses in the morning.
Well, good Tuesday morning, everybody. I am Glenda Geek from Ocala, Florida.
And I am Christy Landwehr, and you are listening to Horses in the Morning on Horse Radio Network. This episode is brought to you by the Certified Horsemanship Association. Good morning, horse world.
Houston, we have a problem.
Ability equals skill plus knowledge.
I got a bad feeling about this.
Here's a safety tip for you from the Certified Horsemanship Association.
Missed it by that much.
How can I change this to make it better the next time?
Help you, I can. Yes.
Time for Training Tuesday on Horses in the Morning with the Certified Horsemanship Association.
Thank you, Jennifer. Well, today it is Training Tuesday, and Christy is back now. We've been doing this Tuesday episode for a very long time on the third Tuesday of every month. First of all, I can't believe it's the third Tuesday of January already, but it is. Hi, Christy.
Hi, Glenn. Hi, Jen. How are you both today?
Good. So good to have you back. You've done a lot of things since we talked last, so I'm looking forward to hearing about those. You've been a lot of places, and of course, it's a new year to look forward to with all the trainers out there doing their things. So, and you know, hopefully some new ones joining the fold with the CHA and becoming certified. So,
yes.
A big year.
This is our big membership renewal time. So we've got lots of memberships pouring in. We run on a calendar year. And lots of excitement, so it's good.
And what that means in plain English is that Christy can get paid this month because
yay!
Because the membership renewals are finally coming in again.
We love that. You know, I always say I run a nonprofit association, but that is simply a tax model. It is not a business model. You should have profit in a nonprofit association. Otherwise, that's not good. I don't like Top Ramen. I like
steak.
Yeah,
there's a lot of them that haven't figured that out yet.
Yes.
Are you allowed, in fact, to have profit in a year?
Oh, absolutely you are, as long as then you're putting that profit towards good use towards your mission. Absolutely. And the big thing that what happens with a 501c3 is that they're looking at your percentages. So you can only have a certain percentage of your overall income go, for example, to staffing. You have to have most of it go towards the mission, which is the programming that you do to accomplish your mission.
Okay. So that they kind of break it down that way. Expenses and staffing and then mission.
Yes, very much so.
Interesting. I always wondered how that worked, because if you don't have any profit to roll over to the next year, you have a lean year, you're in trouble.
Yes. No, they have no problem with you doing some savings. You know, you can do CDs, you can have savings, you can certainly invest even if you needed to. But the big goal is that you just, there's percentages of savings that's allowed, there's percentages of staffing that's allowed. There's a lot of those things when you're looking at a nonprofit model.
And a lot of paperwork, from what I understand.
There's a little bit of paperwork. Yeah, yeah. That's why you hire a good CPA accountant that can do all your 990s for you.
Yeah, yeah. There's extra paperwork. I mean, we have an LLC and, you know, there's extra paperwork for that, but nothing like a nonprofit.
Yes, it's quite a bit. I definitely would not want to do that myself. It's really good to hire outside help for certain things.
Although, you know, we've been at an LLC for 5 years and we've been operating as a nonprofit. So
remember, it is a tax model, not a business plan.
Oh, that's it. See, I got it wrong. That's where the problem is. Jennifer, what's coming up on today's show?
Coming up on today's Certified Horsemanship Association January edition, Jennifer Willey and Laura Cameron are going to stop by and share their favorite do's and don'ts at the barn. And in between, we ourselves will consider some of our horsemen's pet peeve lists. And happy National Popcorn Day, everybody. Please pop responsibly.
Thank you, Jennifer. Well, we were just talking about it before the show. Next week at this time, I'll be heading to Philadelphia for the American Equestrian Trade Association show, where English wholesalers meet retailers. But you had the opportunity to head to WESA, which is the Western English
Sales Association. Yes.
What is it? Western English?
Western English Sales Association.
Sales Association. Okay. I couldn't remember. But so you headed over there. Apparently that's not too far from where you are in Denver. That one, from what I hear, Jennifer was there once. I've never been there. It's supposed to be huge.
Yeah, I'll tell you, your feet hurt. Wear comfortable boots if you go. Oh my goodness. It is big, and you walk and walk, but it is so neat to see kind of some of the new and innovative products that are coming out on the market. And then to see everyone who's in town for the stock show, because of course we're one of the largest stock shows in the country, and that's going on right now in January over at the National Western Complex. So there's a lot going on, and it's very, very fun. A lot of the breed associations and discipline organizations, some of their leaders come to do meetings and things. So you get to see a lot of people once a year. They come to me instead of me having to go to them. I like that.
Now, now this is Wholesalers Meets Retailers. That show's the same as the one out here, right?
Correct. Okay. Yes, that part is the same.
But not open to the public, what I mean.
Well, it's not open to the public, but what you can do, like you can't buy anything. You have to be a buyer of an actual store to be able to do that. But you can go in. There is a fee to go like for the day if you want to meet some people there and have meetings and things like that. You just get a different tag, so you can't buy anything at, you know, wholesale prices.
Ah, okay. So what was to talk a little bit of product here, what was the trend you saw this year? What did you see a lot of?
You know, there's still going to be a whole lot of color and bling and fun in regards to the Western stuff. And it's neat. Last night, I actually took some of my riding students to the Grand Prix, which goes on at the stock show, you know, the big jumping competition where they're jumping over 5-foot fences. Very fun. And there's even getting to be some bling in traditional hunter. We had a couple of the ladies with their show coats on that had bling around the collar. So we still like to be sparkly.
Wow. Color and hunters. Amazing.
I know. There was somebody in a blue jacket, like not like dark navy blue, but like kind of almost a royal blue. I'm like, oh boy, we're getting a little bit out here now.
Yeah, the jumpers have been doing bling for a while now. They've even gotten the Western belts and all that stuff. But I didn't know the hunters were finally stepping out a tiny bit.
Yes, and you know, the Grand Prix competition is just so fun because these horses, boy, they are amazing. And of course, the jump off is always fun to watch because they cut corners and they do things that you're like, okay, I would never even do that if I had the best. That's amazing what you just did. How did you seriously cut in between those two standards to go jump over that oxer? How did you do that? It's really, really good.
Well, that's good. That's a lot of fun. And I would, you know, we'd love to get out to WESA sometime. We've done ADA for so long and we'll continue to do it, but I've never been to WESA. Was it WESA or WESA?
You know, I've heard it pronounced both ways. I say WESA, but you know, WESA, potato, patata. I think it kind of depends.
And the place, is it in like multi-stories, like a big building?
Yes, it actually is. And it's in the old Denver Merchandise Mart, which has been around for quite a long time. So it's so funny. They have these elevators that'll take you up to the floor to floor. There's actually four floors on one of the buildings. And they have people standing by each set of elevators. And you have to leave three steps in between each person. Otherwise, the elevator shuts down.
That's
very entertaining.
That's funny. That is an old building. Well, that'll be fun. We're going to have to come out and do that sometime. You can come co-host. We'll do one of our new product shows from WESA one of these days.
That would be wonderful. It's only 30 minutes from my house, so then you can come over and meet my ponies,
oh,
too.
Oh, cool. Very good. Yeah, that'd be fun. We'll have to do that. And you also did some quarter horse stuff.
Yes, I actually, I was able to go to the Arabians there. They had their convention in Tulsa in November. And then I'm able to go, it sounds like, to the American Paint Horse Association. They're going to have their convention. This is kind of neat in Virginia, in Richmond, in February. And then
well, that's interesting. You don't often think about Richmond, but you think about horses. So.
Isn't that great? Yeah. And I think that'll be really fun for people to get to do the tours of Williamsburg. And some people, I think the APHJA, their junior association, is going to go over to DC for the day.
Oh, cool.
And tour around. Yeah. So a really, really good experience. And then March, of course, is Quarter Horses again. And Quarter Horses going on in Vegas this year.
Oh, the AQHA's in Vegas?
They are.
Well, that's not too far from you either.
No. So that's pretty close. So those are the three big and upcoming ones as far as breed associations go.
Well, didn't I see you with some pictures with some cowboys you just posted on Facebook?
Yes, that was actually AQHA had its reception at WESA on Friday night. And so that was me actually with some reigning gentlemen from NRHA, Todd and Todd. They're both named Todd. So that was those were two gentlemen that I was with that evening.
Yeah, I noticed how you always seek out the good-looking cowboys when you go to the...
Well, you know, it's good for a picture op, Glenn.
I'm just saying, I just observe those things. That's all.
I need to watch what I put on Facebook, obviously.
And the CHA had posted some new videos that people can check out.
Yes. And if anyone wants to go to our site, or you can go directly to our YouTube channel, which is just CHA Instructors, they're free for anyone to embed and utilize for your students, your staff, yourself, your friends, your family, whoever you would like. And they're topics that people give us. Everything from some very basic, let's learn how to do things, all the way up to much more advanced. And they're fun and they're really short. They're in between 2 and 7 minutes normally. And two of them this year are for any of the people that are listening that like to go out into the backcountry and do some overnight trail riding. There is highline and picket lining and how to do some of those much more difficult knots than just the typical quick release we all seem to know. Things like the bowline knot and the butterfly hitch and some others that are very helpful when you're packing in.
You know, I want to watch those because I never quite understood how they work. So I'll definitely have to take a look at those.
Yes, and Fred Bruce and Stan Lowen that are doing those videos, we call them our Black Hat Brigade because, you know, it's kind of like shoes. At a certain time of year, you have to wear the black felt, and other times of year, you have to wear the straw, and this is just how it is in cowboy world. And so every fall, of course, it's black hats because it's felt time, or you're, you know, any color, but it has to be felt. So needless to say, there they are doing their thing with their felt hats on, and they've been around in CHA since, oh, the late 70s, and they're just super, super guys, and they have a big trail encampment at our convention, and they cook the cowboy coffee, and they teach you how to do all these knots. Very fun.
I had to go out and buy a new cowboy hat because I'm going to be making some appearances coming up here next month in the winter, and all I had was my, like, off-white one, so I had to get a darker one for the winter.
Yes, you have to.
Yeah,
you have to
look. I didn't want to look unstyled. Not that anybody I'm going to be talking to would know the difference, but...
But you know.
But I know that I'm out of style. Well, let's take a listen to one of the videos. You had picked one out that we can take a listen to.
Yes, it's catching a horse in a stall. And the reason why I chose this one is, of course, we're brand new partners with the Arabian Horse Association, and we do use a lovely Arabian in it. And it's also one that people had had some issues. They said, sometimes my horse crowds me when we go into the stall to get her, and some other things happen. So that's why we chose this topic.
Very good. And this kind of goes along with today we're going to be talking a lot about, well, the theme of the day is, are you scaring people away from your barn? And we're going to be talking a little bit about bad habits and all of those kind of things that happen in barns. So this is a good one to lead us into that conversation today.
Hi, I'm Teresa Cackert, and I'm here with a safety tip brought to you by the Certified Horsemanship Association. We're here today at West Texas A&M University, and we're going to talk to you about how to safely catch and bring your horse out of the stall. I'm working with a purebred registered Arabian mare, Miss Dittos 2, and she's going to be our lovely model for this video. So the first thing I want to do when I come up to the stall is I want to take and assess the general situation to make sure everything is going to be safe for me. We want to take in our horse's general appearance as well as their emotional state. I'm going to be in a close, contained environment with her, and it's imperative for me to stay safe. So as I come up to the stall, I'm going to look over just briefly from a horsemanship perspective and make sure that nothing's come loose or has gone awry in the night and everything is safe for her. It's always great whenever you're working around your horses to make sure you're continuing to keep them safe by checking their environment every time you're in it. So as I come to get Ditto, I'm going to make sure that if she is in her stall, she's comfortable. She's not agitated or upset. And this is actually great. I would love to go in the stall and approach a horse with their head to me and their rear end away. And that happens to be how she's set up now. I'm gonna open the gate, and I'm gonna open it a small bit and come and step inside. A lot of horses tend to be stall rushers and can start to crowd you in the stall itself. If this were to happen, I would ask her to move back and step away from the stall door so that I felt I had the safety and room to move. So as I go in to see Miss Ditto, I'm going to first just make sure she's doing okay and she knows I'm here. A lot of time the horses can be resting in their stalls and we don't want to startle or surprise them and accidentally have them hurt us. So as I go around, I'm going to get on her near side. I'm just going to go around behind her, keeping a hand on her and speaking to her the entire time. And usually the easiest thing you can do to secure your horse is just to drop the lead rope around their neck to make sure that they don't turn and move away to go see a buddy. Now that I have her caught here, I'm going to slip the halter over her nose, being careful not to put my fingers into any part of my halter rope. Get her beautiful mane arranged. I get her securely caught with the lead rope itself. Now, when you're working in the stall with your horse, it's important to make sure that they are moving and yielding out of your space so that you can catch them and work with them in here safely. So I'm just going to ask her to step back. Good girl. And you can see how by just asking her to step back that little bit gives me the ability to come and approach the stall door without feeling like I have to squeeze between the wall or the buckets. Always give yourself lots of room. And when you're in here, make sure that your lead line is folded and not coiled around your hand. So as I come up to the stall door, I also want to make sure again that she doesn't crowd me. She's excited to go out and go for a ride today, so I'm going to ask her to step back a step or two so that I can safely open the door. You can even take and coil your rope over your thumb if you need to, so that if it needed to slip out, it can, and kind of place a hand on the bottom of her halter so that if she starts to come out as I open the door, I have the ability to halt her there. So you saw as she started to come out, I kind of just had to check her there. And I want to make sure the door is totally open so before I bring her out. The larger exit way you have for your horse, the better off they're going to be and the more safely they'll be able to exit the stall. As I bring her out, I'm going to ask her just to briefly pause at the stall door just to make sure she doesn't become a rusher. Remember, we're always improving our horses' skill sets. Now I'm going to ask her to come on out here with me. Bring her all the way through the gate. And then we're ready to go out and enjoy our day today. This has been a safety tip brought to you by the Certified Horsemanship Association.
Well, that's the quietest Arabian ever, by the way. That one was not rushing the door.
No, very calm. So I could hear the horse stuff in the background, some of the snuffling. I enjoyed that. I'm like, oh, that's good audio on that video. That's good.
Yeah. It was good. I just thought it was funny because that was about the quietest horse ever. And we've all had those horses that have done all of those things, right? That rushed the door and done all that, turn around to kick you. I mean, we've all had those while dealing with horses over the years. Those videos are great. Jennifer's going to post a link to all the videos that you can check out on the Certified Horsemanship Association. She'll put them over on Horses in the Morning. And you have some conferences coming up that people can actually attend.
Yes, I would love to talk to everyone about these. This is for everyone. So I know Certified Horsemanship Association tends to be known as for the riding instructor, but this is for everybody. Anyone who wants to come and learn more just about horses in general is invited. So our first one for the year is going to be in March, and it's March 3rd through 6th. For those of you that live up in Washington, it's going to be in Port Orchard in the state of Washington at Miracle Ranch. So you can get on our website, go under regional conferences, and you will find the information to contact them. And then in April, we're going to be headed over to the opposite end of the country, and there is going to be a regional conference in Houghton, New York, at Houghton College. And that's actually a lovely area. It's very open and lots of greenery. And it should be a good one in April because most of the snow would have melted by then, and it should be lovely. And what's so fun about our regional conferences is you get to ride horses. They're always at a camp or in a school or somewhere where there's great school horses available for you to actually get on. Region 2, we're going to be in Canada. About 15% of our membership is in Canada, so we love when we get to have a regional there. And that's going to be May 14th at Cloud 9 Ranch in Steinbach, Manitoba, for those of you that are close to the border or actually live in Manitoba. And then we have our next one that's scheduled right now is in June. And that one's going to be back on the more in the center of the country, but more towards the west. And that's going to be at Laramie County Community College in Cheyenne, Wyoming, up there right outside of Cheyenne in Larimer. And that's going to be June 10th and 11th. So please do go on our site and look at any of those that you would like to attend. They're always very reasonably priced. You can get a day rate or a two-day rate if you decide to do both days, some or 2 days. And they're really, really fun. And we do, Glenn, also a lot of local events. We have a booth going on at the Christian Camping International event in New Mexico. Later on in February, we have another one at the end of January in North Carolina. So again, you can find all the different things that we're doing to find out more information and meet some of our local state reps and regional directors if you go on our website. So please do.
Very good. Well, now we're going to be part of the conversation today is about pet peeves that students have in the barn, that instructors have in the barn, or boarders, right? So there's three different groups that can have pet peeves in any one barn. And it's funny, when you have more than two people, you get a lot of pet peeves. So you have some articles on the Certified Horsemanship Association about different pet peeves. And Jennifer, you put together a list too, right?
Well, you know, horse person, I have to have pet peeves.
All right, good. But let's hear yours. Let's start with yours.
Oh, we're going to start with mine.
Yes.
Oh, I feel special. One of my favorite, my biggie pet peeves is riding instructors who are distracted while teaching lessons. They're answering texts on their phone. They're taking phone calls. They're chit-chatting with bystanders. They're gabbing with the parents. Just, you need to be with your student, period.
Boy, I agree. And I'll tell you something, Jennifer, there's actually lawsuits now based on riding instructors that are not focused on their students and are looking down texting when the incident occurs and they're getting in trouble.
Yikes. Uh-huh. That's scary.
And of course, no CHA instructors, other random people.
You know, it's just rude. One, it's rude. It's, you know, the student's riding his horse looking over and you're not paying any attention, whether it's talk. And the one, you know, before cell phones, it was just talking to people along the fence.
Right.
And Jennifer was always a believer in standing in the middle. When I noticed this all the time when she was doing instruction, she would never stand along the fence. She would always stand in the middle and be totally focused on the students. And, you know, they're paying good money in many cases to have your full attention, not half attention.
Absolutely. And the standing in the middle is also good because, you know, you can speed up your horses by going behind them and slow them down by going in front of them, kind of like you're round penning them. And you can also maybe save the day if you have to, especially for little ones and beginners. Yes, the middle of the ring is great.
The little tiny ponies are default come to mama.
Yes,
when
exactly.
When things are going wrong, it is going to the riding instructor.
And you know the other one that bothers me too, and this is just me.
Glenn has pet peeves too.
I do. The other one that bothers me in that is when unless they have a physical impairment, let's take that out of the picture, but they're perfectly healthy and they're sitting either on the fence or in a chair. For some reason, if I'm paying my instructor, I want the instructor standing. That's just a pet peeve of mine. That's all.
Well, and every now and then they have a bullhorn and they're hollering at you with the bullhorn.
Yes.
Are you kidding me? Don't yell at me with a bullhorn.
There's a new system they're starting to advertise, Jennifer, on what's that called? C-Coach?
C-Coach.
Yeah, they're advertising on the eventing show now where it puts earphones in all of your students, even in a group lesson, and they're talking over a radio frequency.
That would be mellow and calm.
Yes, it is. So the instructor can talk at a normal voice even from the far end of a big arena, and everybody hears it just right in their ears. There's no yelling going on. So I think it's better for the horses, too, to not have that yelling going on. Because the yelling makes your students tense. It makes the horses tense. It just makes everybody tense. Even if it's not meant to be, you know, you're not being berated, it's just a louder voice. So it is really a great idea. Okay, Jennifer, sorry, I didn't mean to hijack your...
And, you know, this also applies to distracted judges. I actually had experience with this recently at a competition I went to it didn't happen to me personally, but when I was watching other people riding, I could tell that some of the competitors were very frustrated because the judge was obviously distracted and not really paying close attention to all of the riders in the class.
Yep, hard to score and be subjective when you're doing that.
When you're talking to your girlfriend or boyfriend on the phone, is what you mean? Just saying. Yeah.
Yeah. So, number two, students who just...
Let's see who else we can piss off today. Go ahead.
Yeah. Students who just go through the motions. And we've all had these as writing instructors. The student comes to their lessons and things are going well. You know, we're practicing left lead canters and we've got the aid. Things are going great. Great student. But every time you see that student riding when you're not lording over them, they ride like a freaking monkey. That drives me nuts. I usually fire those students. How about you?
Jennifer, I think you need to come to a certification clinic. It would be great fun to have you for 5 days. When are you going to get certified? That's what I want to know.
Well, yeah.
She retired from teaching a while back.
Yeah, I retired a while back.
Now you know why.
Because she had lots of pet peeves and it irritated her.
Exactly.
You know, I miss it a tiny bit. I do miss it a tiny bit. But have you had those students, Christy?
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Yes, and especially in the really large group programs, you know, we were at a at-risk youth barn and they actually weren't wanting to be there themselves. Sometimes the juvenile center would send them or whatever the case may be, and they actually didn't want to be there. And that was also very challenging. Yes, the ones that are passionate and excited and enthusiastic, but yeah, every now and then you get the one that, yep, just going through the motions, whatever.
Number three.
Glenn, I've got to run off and call our first guest. So number three is going to apply to you as well. So take it over, dude.
Oh, equipment in the indoor. People who were in there before you, if you're at a group facility and have left the jumps and chairs and all kinds of stuff in the middle, so it takes you 10 minutes before you do your ride or your next lesson to clean it all out. I think that's just common courtesy. Unfortunately, we don't have a lot of that left anymore, common courtesy. It's going away.
Oh, and I'll tell you, I am a crazy arena person. I want my arena flawless. I love a perfectly drug arena to go show off my, you know, serpentines or my figure eights or whatever. And all of a sudden, there's all this stuff, mounting blocks in the way, all that. Oh, yeah, I agree with that one. I'm going to tell you, I'm going to hop in and do a number four because I don't even know if it's on the list you have, and it's very important to me. And it's in regards to people that don't hard tie, but they cross tie their horses. There is, when you cross tie, you know how they have the actual quick release snaps.
Yep.
And those quick release snaps need to be attached to either end, the end that attaches to the horse and also the end that attaches to the wall. So you should have four of them. But let's say you only have two of them. They should not be attached to the horse, like a lot of people think, because do you really want to go over to a horse that's rearing and striking and having an issue and all hung up and try to disengage him from his entanglement? No. You want to go to the wall, unattach the quick release snap from the wall, and then be able to have a lead rope. And then be able to get in there and kind of handle what's going on. So that's one that I think is very important when you're dealing with cross ties.
Yeah, we had I had an 18 and a half hand Percheron the one day that I forget why this was, but in the barn decided it's the only time I've ever seen this horse get off its front feet, actually reared up in the barn. And when you have an 18 and a half hand Percheron rearing in your barn, that's a scary thing. And he did manage to break both of them, and he broke the snaps at the halter in that case. So I know exactly what you're talking about, and I've made that mistake before.
Yes, and I'll tell you, it is good for your equipment to break. You know, some of this super-duper equipment that's made out of neoprene and nylon that won't break, I'll tell you, there's a reason why sometimes the leather stuff is good, because you want the horse to get out of its entanglement. You don't want them to be trapped.
Right, right. Especially, you know, when you're in the barn like that and have a situation where it could go bad really quickly.
Yes, absolutely.
Where there's confined space like that. Been there, done that.
Uh-huh.
That same horse, by the way, got cast in its stall the one day. It took four of us with ropes on its feet to turn it over.
Sounds to me like it's a Percheron that really should have been a mini.
He acted like a mini a lot of times. Jennifer used to give lessons on him with five-year-olds. He used to have little tiny five-year-olds left on this 18 and a half hand Percheron, and he was quiet as could be. He was the best lesson horse we had, actually. It was better than the ponies.
I love it. That's right. Sometimes the bigger ones are, without a doubt.
Yep. All right. Well, let's get to our first guest, and we'll talk about more of this stuff going on in the barn.
Super. Well, we're so excited to have Jennifer on today. Jennifer is a master CHA instructor and clinic staff for us, and she's currently our Region 3 director up there in Minnesota. She was named the CHA Instructor of the Year in 2007 for us, and she's also the educational chairperson for the Minnesota Horse Council. She's been a director at a large horse camp and managed a riding school. She teaches Western and English horsemanship and loves teaching beginners. She's also a marketing and business development professional with a passion for promoting the horse industry. So hello, Jennifer, how are you?
I'm good. Thank you. Thank you for having me on this morning.
Yes, we're so happy to have you on. And this is great, Jen and Glenn. This is actually Jennifer's idea. She's like, I don't know if it's like going to irritate people to have this topic, but people scare people away from their own barns all the time. And they wonder why they have no clients. And it's because they just do some scary stuff. And I think that it's a really good topic and one that should certainly
Jennifer,
be
we've been
about
doing
today.
This show for 5 years. The fact that we have any listeners left is amazing because at one time or another, we would have made them all mad. So we're okay. We're good.
It's just an educational experience.
That's right.
Right?
That's and right. Do you ever get sick of people every time they say Minnesota using the fake Minnesota accent? Because we all do it. I don't know what it is about Minnesota that we all have to use the accent, and you don't even have the accent.
Well, I've been told that I do, but I don't hear it myself. So, no, I never get sick of that.
Okay, good.
People have told me they like it. So.
All right, good. Because we're always making fun of them. Even every comedian in the world, anytime they say Minnesota, always says it that way, right? It just happens.
Right.
Just comes out. Sorry. I apologize for everybody else. All right.
I think that's great. I don't even know if I said it that way.
Yeah, you
I
did.
Have. I
you did. And you did it without
really?
Even thinking
awesome.
About it.
Very good. So Jennifer, I know I gave a little bit about your background. Is there anything else that you would like to share with everyone before we get started?
No, Christy, no, other than I really do love teaching beginning riders. And I think that our new riders and beginners are the future of the horse industry. So I think, you know, this topic of how to keep people coming into our barns and not scaring them away is a good one. So thanks for having this today.
Yeah, definitely. And I'll tell you, I think first impressions are huge. You know, we can't help ourselves. We tend to judge immediately when we see or hear or what have you. So what do you think are some big first impressions that and some things that the owner of a barn should think about when their clients are first arriving?
Thanks for asking that. So I think that part of the first impression starts even before the client gets to the barn. I think that they start forming opinions based on what they've read on your website or on Facebook. So making sure to monitor that closely is good. Also, being able to find the facility is a big one. People can get, you know, they can get anxiety if they get lost on the way somewhere, and then that can add to any anxiety that they already might have about riding a horse or being around horses. So starting off, just making sure that people can find your facility, that the directions are clear, map questable. Those are big. And then even also, you know, when they get to your facility, making sure that the driveway is marked clearly. A lot of people are coming from the city and aren't used to driving around in rural areas. And so they might not be as comfortable, you know, turning down a long driveway where they can't see what's at the end of it. And then from there, even when they're driving up, making sure that parking is really visible. So when you drive up into your facility, is it really obvious to know where to park? Those of us who spent a lot of time in a rural environment are used to driving up to different farms and just sort of knowing not to park on top of a septic system, or we'll find a place to park next to a trailer. But people coming from the city, they don't know that. They need to sort of have clear places to park as well. And even from there, knowing which door to go in. One of the barns I teach at right now has three front doors, and all of them you can go into, but it isn't obvious without the welcome sign over the top of one of them that lets people know where they're actually supposed to go. So those are a couple of things. Also, even just having, you know, what horses do you have out front? And I understand running the horse business and where horses go, there's a lot more to it than just what you can see. But, you know, having like a giant dark color thoroughbred out front is the first horse that people see. It can also be sort of intimidating to a group of people who are coming from the city and they don't have any horse experience. If you have some ponies around, you know, then maybe the ponies should be in the front paddocks if you can help it. Even though I know that most likely the thoroughbred is probably the more gentle. but having those smaller or even more colorful horses out front to sort of jive with what people think about when they're going up to a riding stable for children or for beginners.
All the minis in the front. But
that's right.
Minis in the front, mini donkeys in the front, better. Anything cute in the front.
That's right, all the cutie pies. Right, exactly, you have the goats and the llamas and the alpacas.
Yeah, that's right. Everybody in the front.
Yes. And it's so. And for us that, you know, for those of us that have grown up in the rural environment or are used to being around farms and farm animals and livestock, that sounds sort of silly. But for people that are coming from a city or a suburb and they're used to, you know, they've watched Black Beauty, they like My Little Pony and Barbie horses or what have you, having those more gentle seeming animals out front really does help their experience along. Another thing that I've seen too is, you know, just about every farm has a farm dog, and I would never suggest that people not have farm dogs, but we also have to remember that some people are afraid of dogs. There's actually quite a few people that are afraid of dogs. It's a good percentage of the population. And so if you have a farm dog and a really friendly dog likes to meet all the vehicles and all the people, one suggestion would be to put a collar on that dog that is very, like if it's a female dog, maybe it's a pink collar or it's a purple collar or it's a shiny collar or maybe it's a bandana or something that just shows people that that dog is a friendly dog versus sort of like an old dirty farm collar, which is usually what they're wearing. So some of these little things to help our city people and suburban people get out into the country.
I'll tell you, Jennifer, and the details are so good. You know, the big Time to Ride program that's going on right now that American Horse Council is sponsoring and many, many breed associations and retailers and manufacturers are getting involved in. They actually, we just had a meeting here at our Western English Sales Association market. And one of the things that we talked about was some of the people that teach beginners to ride, they don't even have a sign on their gate. So one of the ladies right. who participated in the Time to Ride program, she got sent a banner and she put the banner Time to Ride out on our gate. And she said it increased business just because now people actually know she's there, the drive-by people, and yes. she lives on a busy road. So you're right. You know, mm-hmm. sometimes doing some of this little stuff ends up being a huge deal for the perception of people. And so many of our people now that are coming are urban. They're not agricultural folks. Yes. They're city folks. So great ideas.
Thank you.
So what are some don'ts that you really think, boy, please never do this? And we're talking anywhere in your facility, like your tack room, your feed room, your arenas, your trails, places where the public might go. What are some ideas you have for folks there?
So as far as don'ts go, I mean, I think the biggest don't is, you know, make sure to keep up with the cleanliness of your facility. I mean, no matter what the age is, I mean, you could have a 100-year-old horse farm and it can still be kept well. So making sure that, you know, repairs are made and, you know, manure is removed promptly. Aisles are swept if you have cement aisles, that sort of thing. You know, washing walls, not leaving stuff out. In all of your common areas, try not to turn, you know, your wash rack, for example, into another storage space, which can easily happen sometimes, especially in the winter. Making sure garbages are empty, making sure people know where garbages are, making sure people know where bathrooms are. And, you know, and even having, and this is really more of a do, but even having like a picnic table or a table or something where it's really obvious where people can sort of convene. Because I think sometimes too, in some barns, you just don't even know where to stand. If you don't really understand the environment, people don't know where to be in the barn when horses are coming by and things like that. So giving people a place to be as well is really important.
I agree. And the same thing like with arenas, you know, some of the arenas are great and they have bleachers for the parents to sit on, let's say, while the kids are taking a lesson or what have you. And others don't have mm-hmm. anything at all. And I'll tell you, to stand around, especially if it's relatively cold outside or relatively hot, either way, and not a comfortable temperature for an hour is quite a long time. So just doing something simple like having a picnic table is a great idea. So I'm going to jump into just a different topic now because we did touch on that Time to Ride thing really quick. And I know, Jennifer, you deal with a lot of this through your Minnesota Horse Council. Do you think that horseback riding competes with other sports?
Absolutely, yes. And I should say even that I almost think that the other sports are competing with horseback riding and winning in a lot of cases.
Darn soccer players.
A little bit more expensive.
Exactly.
Right.
Yeah.
Soccer.
You know, soccer was never a thing years ago when we were growing up. Nobody played soccer. That was always the other sport, you know, that that if you didn't play football or you didn't do anything else, you played soccer. And now it's such a big thing that I really do. And it's for, you know, as a bigger thing for girls coming up, I really think soccer has to be the one that, that has hit us the hardest. I don't know if you guys agree, but...
I absolutely agree with you on that. Soccer has become very popular, and it's relatively inexpensive to get into, and you can get your kids into it at a very young age. So, yes, it is definitely a huge competitor to horseback riding for all of those reasons. And it's not scary because it's just a soccer ball.
It's true. It doesn't bite, usually.
Right.
So then, Jennifer, so how do you think horseback riding needs to catch up with these other activities? What are some of your personal ideas that the industry should do or different independent barns should do?
Well, I think one of the things that the horse industry should start looking at is how other industries are having their people sign up for sessions. If you go to a soccer camp, or if you take soccer, for example, or hockey or softball, they have sessions that they sign up for, and parents are really used to paying for sessions. And so rather than having single lessons, have people start at, you know, four sessions or six sessions, and then try to have them start at the same time as other students. So maybe you're starting new students at the first week of the month, every month. And when you do that, yes, you make people wait, you know, maybe a couple of weeks before they can get in. But that's okay, because creating that wait also just increases the value perception. So that's okay. But then you're also starting people at the same time. And so they're learning together. And when they're learning together, they create bonds with each other that also help them through the sport, which is why you see that that works very well with other sports. So, and I've seen a couple of barns do that where they have sessions and they're quite full. So yeah, that's one of the biggest recommendations that I can make. Also, most sports have, you know, some sort of a show where they have games that they go to. And while a lot of times with riding schools, you know, the kids or the adults, they don't own their own horses, it's hard to set up a horse show, even just a homeschooling show. It's hard to set up. So if you can't do one or two of those a year for your students, another great thing are setting goals, or even using the CHA materials for the levels. So like the tests. So you can say, you know, every quarter we do testing, and then the students can work on their levels. That shows parents that there are goals, and that there's much more to riding than just sitting on the horse. And it gives people things to work towards, which is, I think, is really, really important in any activity, is to have goals and to have something to work towards.
Yes, Jennifer, and I appreciate the opportunity for a commercial here. So you're right. You know, for that are CHA certified, we actually have badges and pins for the different levels and certificates. And it's not just sometimes the kids and youth that want them. It's also the adults. They also want to go through the levels. And the levels don't just take a week or two. They take quite a few lessons to be able to accomplish the things in the different levels. And then there's not only the actual writing part, but there's all the unmounted part and the groundwork part. And then, of course, the written test about your horse knowledge and your knowledge about tack and diseases and grooming equipment and what have you. So very good to have goals.
Right.
And I love the idea. You know, I have two boys, they're 9 and 11, and I very much am of the belief in, you know, you have to pay for recreational basketball, let's say, for 3 months at a time. And here are all the times we practice, here are all the games. And if you choose not to go, you don't get reimbursed. That's your choice. And I think the riding instruction world is missing out on that. If they go ahead and pay for a month or two at a time and they don't show up, you're not going to reschedule that lesson unless you canceled it due to weather. And then it's up to you if you want to do that. You could even put an inclement weather, we're just going to cancel. I mean, there's only going to be this one day for makeup. And if we go beyond that one day, sorry. And I think a lot of parents are understanding that. Whereas if you do the individual lesson plan, oh, you're constantly having to rearrange and reschedule and make that work out.
Yes, the individual lesson plan used even for private lessons or group lessons is very difficult to manage when you're not going in a session-based schedule. So yes, I think that it's a, and I think if you teach people how to treat your facility, that's how they will treat it. So if you teach them that they can cancel, they will. If you teach them that they have to show up, otherwise they miss it, they will show up. It's sort of, that's just part of how it works, I guess. So yeah, so having goals for the students and having them sign up in sessions, and then also doing like a quarterly barn activity, such as a spring party or a summer party or something of that nature, just to get your clients together. And if you have a lot of young clients that are, you know, they're elementary school or that age group or whatever, you can also do something separate for them. Having that camaraderie really goes a long way as well.
I agree. And I'll tell you, you know, this whole thing is kind of pet peeves around the barn and solutions to solve them. So we talked a little bit about some don'ts. So what do you think are some do's that really impress you when you go to a barn and you think, wow, this would be a really good place for me to take my children or myself to go take a writing lesson? What are some things that really impress you?
Well, you know, I'll tell you, one of my favorite barns to go to here in Minnesota is a barn that's been, the woman that owns it's been teaching lessons for probably 40 years, and she's wonderful. One of the things I like walking up to her facility, well, one is, it's very clear on how to get to where she is. The sign out front, and you know exactly where to park when you get there. But then also her barn, she has sort of created this equestrian ambiance with decorations, like and nothing expensive. Like she just picked things up over the years and she sets them out. She has flowers out around the front of where you're supposed to come into her facility, and when you come into it, it's really obvious which door to go into, and it's really obvious where to go and sit. And there's always someone that's there that's smiling and says hi to you. So it's always like that. I've met a lot of different people there. I've stopped by there numerous times, and it's always that way. I think also I've also been impressed with, there's another facility that I love their student activities and all the interactions that they do. They actually do lessons, and they do like private and semi-private lessons. But then they also do it's on a Sunday where they do practice riding. So once students are, they pass a certain test or they get approved, they can do practice riding on Sunday where they actually use the school horses and tack up, and then they pay for that extra. But they're pretty much the instructors sit and monitor that experience for them for the 2 or 3 hours that they're allowed to be there to do it. And I love that because they get the opportunity to practice and sort of work on their own and get that extra riding time in, and then also to practice. And I think that really goes a long way with their facility. So those are just a couple of the things that I really, really enjoy.
Well, that's a great idea, because then what you're doing is you're building future horse people, because then the parents say, oh, I see. So you've got to show up at this time to get the horse ready and then ride the horse and then put the horse away. So the commitment's going to be this amount of time. Oh, look, my daughter mm-hmm. or son can actually do this all by themselves. I can sit in the car and get, you know, caught up with whatever I need to do, or I can come in and be an observer. I don't actually have to help because I don't know how or whatever. And that's a great idea. And then being able to eventually maybe lease and then eventually own, and that just kind of raises the bar for everyone and who's doing it to learn how to do it correctly with a little bit of guidance ahead of time. So that's super.
Yes. Yes. The other thing I wanted to mention too is, and I think I mentioned it earlier, but you know, getting manure picked up immediately, not just in aisles and stalls, but also in paddocks around the barn, the closest paddocks. And I know that sounds like a lot of extra work, but it really cuts down on flies. And for a clientele that is not used to being around it, it's a really big deal, because they really do notice that more so than us horse people. We're just used to stepping over it or picking it up or whatever we're doing. But non-horse people, it's a real, I don't want to say learning curve, but it's definitely, definitely something that they have to learn to get used to. And so, in your facility and around it, on those paddocks that are closest to your building, getting it out of there, is important. And it makes a huge difference when it comes to flies.
Yes, it sure does. So, you know, we only have about a minute here and then we're going to have to wrap up. So if there is one thing that you want to leave people with, what would that be?
I would say that remember that everyone that's coming to your facility for the first time to ride is an opportunity to create a new horse person, and you don't know who that person will turn out to be. You could be teaching the next president of the Quarter Horse Association. You could be teaching a future jockey, a future horse owner. You also could teach that person one lesson and then they leave and they never ride a horse again. You don't know that. But remember that that person, that you don't know who they could turn out to be. And so you want to make sure that that first lesson is a good one. Try to impart as much information as you can to them without overwhelming them. And try to give them the best experience that they can possibly have with a horse so they want to come back and do it again. Not only for yourself, but also for the future of the horse industry. Keep in mind, too, that someone could come take a lesson with you one time and then come back 4 years later and then start taking regular lessons. You just don't know what's going on in people's lives. So,
well, Jennifer, I got to say that that's probably the wisest thing that's been said in a long time on this show, and that also applies to life in general. You know, you treat everybody respectfully because you don't know who that person is. You know, they could be somebody that you're sitting across for hiring you for a job, you know, in the future. You don't know.
Right.
You just don't. And, you know,
we've
always tried to take that approach in business because, you know, we don't know who we're going to be working with in the future, who's going to be part of our lives in the future. And, you know, just treat everybody that way and you'll do all right.
Yes, absolutely.
So, Jennifer, how can people find you if they want to know more about these things and how can they reach out?
Well, I teach at Woodlock Stable in Hoosville, Minnesota. I'm also on Facebook. I actually don't have a website. I should because I talk about it so much. But I don't have a website because I don't teach full time. So, but Woodlock Stable in Hoosville, Minnesota, they know how to get a hold of me. And I also have Facebook and LinkedIn.
Wonderful. Well, Jennifer, thank you so much for being on the show today. We really appreciate this topic.
Yep. Thank you. Thanks for having me. Have a good day.
Thanks, Jennifer.
Bye-bye.
Good conversation. And I do have a question or two that has come in from one of our listeners that we'll get to. Why don't we do the song first, and then we'll come back, and Laura's going to be joining us, and we're kind of going to continue this conversation on all that happens in your barn coming up here in a minute. But first, I'm going to fly from Casey Smith, a horse girl, I think, out of Tennessee.
I've always been the shy and quiet type, biding my time until the time was right. Driving through life with one foot on the brake, missed every chance that I did not take. Now I'm gonna do whatever I please. No, nothing's gonna have a hold on me. Maybe some crazy thing, not gonna be afraid. I'll stand up straight and tall. Made up my mind, I'm gonna do it all. I'm gonna do whatever I please. Yeah, no, nothing's gonna have a hold on. Take
That was Casey Smith with I'm Gonna Fly. You can find all of her music at caseysmith.com. You're listening to Horses in the Morning. I am Glenn the Geek, and I am here with Christy from the Certified Horsemanship Association. Christy is here with us the third Tuesday of every month to talk about training and all things that go along with it. Christy, while Jennifer's getting our next guest on the line, I have some questions from Dr. Ellen, one of our two Manhattan listeners that we know about. Dr. Ellen, you're not alone anymore. I got an email from another lady who listens from Manhattan. So now we know there are two. And she has some questions. Are you ready?
Yes.
She asks, and she rides in upstate New York, I believe, are all trainers certified? Must they be certified? No, unfortunately not in this country.
That is correct. So I often answer that question with, if I lived over in Europe, I would be a government employee, because over in Europe, it's mandated by federal law in most of the countries over there that somebody has to be. Whereas here, no, it is a voluntary certification. That's why I run a 501c3 nonprofit organization with an educational mission and not a government entity. And so, no, it is absolutely not required. And we do differentiate between instructor and trainer. So to us, an instructor is somebody that teaches the rider, and a trainer is somebody that teaches the horse. So we do not certify horse training and how to train a horse to do something. We certify the instructor on how to teach someone to do something with that horse.
Important distinction. She also asks, are there multiple organizations who certify instructors or training, and what are the names of those associations? Well, there's you guys.
Yes, we are the largest certifying body of riding instructors in North America. We've certified over 30,000 individuals. We're going to be on our 50th year next year. So we are the largest. Yes. Wow. And then there is American Riding Instructors Association.
And let me clarify for everybody, Christy has not been the head of that organization for all 50 years.
Thank you, Glenn.
You're welcome. Anytime. I'm here to help.
All righty then. Yes, I'm going to go put on more face cream when I'm done and make sure my gray hairs are not showing. Okay.
She also asked.
When we're at trade shows that we get asked that question is, we are the largest because we've been around the longest and we've certified the most people. However, with that being said, there are others. American Riding Instructors Association certifies by video. We certify by a hands-on process. And then USDF, so your dressage federation, they do certify their coaches. And then Hunter Jumpers, they just recently started certifying their coaches as well. But they've only been certifying for about the last 5 to 7 years. So pretty new at it.
And they're very discipline specific.
Yes, they are very much so. Whereas we are very much English as a whole, including flat work and jumping, and then Western as a whole, including everything from pleasure to reining, those types of things.
One more question. She asks, this is a good question, because she's a doctor. So she's a cancer doctor there in New York. She wants to know, are the certifications national then state? For example, we are board certified as doctors through the American Board of Internal Medicine. Then they're also in subspecialties certified too. And I think they're also certified, have their licenses held through the state, if I remember right. So this is a national thing, right?
Yes, very good question. And yes, we are all national-based associations, so there's no state-by-state certifications that exist, except there are some states, like the state of Massachusetts, that does require a riding instructor to be licensed, and that includes taking a written test, though if you're already certified through CHA, for example, you do not have to take the written test. You still have to pay the fee, but you don't have to take the written test. But most of us at this point is definitely national and not state-by-state.
Got it. Very good. Well, while Jennifer is getting everybody on there, did you have anything else about the CHA that we needed to review today?
You know, the only other thing I want everyone to know is we didn't have a chance to talk about specific clinics for those of you that do want to get certified either as an equine facility manager or as a riding instructor or a trail guide. So please do go on our website. Most of our host sites will post all of their clinics by the end of February. So we will list them more in full on the show next month. But please do go on there. You can also get our monthly e-blast for free if you sign up on our homepage, and that way you'll get the clinics delivered to your email box instead of having to remember to come to our website.
And I know some of those include Canada. We have a lot of listeners up there. And apparently, as we determined on the show yesterday, they all know each other. So that's up there in Canada. Inside joke for those that were listening yesterday. We have our guest ready.
Wonderful. I am so excited to have Laura on today as well. Laura Hamron actually has been with us as a level 4 English with Jumping instructor and a level 3 instructor, and also just recently certified as an instructor for riders with disabilities as a clinician. So that is really good. She was just recently at our international conference. She currently lives in Texas, but she began in other places as well. She has taught in Laurel Spring Stables, which is her family business. She also has taught at YMCAs at summer camps in Georgia. And then also throughout her 30-year career, she's instructed English and Western, advanced and beginners for group and for private. She also was at Pegasus Farms. Pegasus Farms is a big program member of CHAs in Ohio. And she was also a PATH, a registered instructor, and still is when she was there. She also has now been at Victory Therapy Center, and they do horse management, therapeutic riding, and she's an equine specialist for their mental health and learning. So she has done quite a few things in her equine career, and it is a full-time gig for her. So hello, Laura. How are you today?
Doing great, Christy. How about you?
Good. Really good to have you on. Before we jump into this topic, is there anything else that you would like to tell our listeners about your background?
No, I know that I had grown up doing dressage and eventing, and when I came to Ohio, that's where I met Tammy Gaynor and started working in the therapeutic industry.
And it's wonderful to have both under your belt, because I'll tell you, that is an ever-growing market, and there's so much to learn on that side as well, because I'll tell you, you know, we talk about people having therapeutic riding, but isn't it therapeutic for everybody to go out and smell the smells and get out of the house and get out from behind our desks and computers and go be with our animals? So it's good for everyone, which is super.
Yes, it is. And it blesses, I mean, we, in the therapeutic industry, you have the blessing of working with a group of volunteers that come in and they're looking for something to do. And then in return, they just, it's therapy for them. They may be cleaning and mucking stalls, but when they get in there and interact with the clients, it then allows them to feel like they're doing something else for someone else. And it becomes a real blessing that way.
Yes, you're dealing with a whole lot of people when you do the therapy side, because you've got the leader of the horse, the instructor, the two sidewalkers, the actual client, the parents or family and friends of the client. I mean, there's a lot of people involved when somebody comes out to take a riding lesson, not just one person.
There is. And that's part of the reason this topic that we're talking about today is so great, is because you're going beyond just your normal horse people coming out and learning how to ride, or you know, somebody new learning how to ride. You've got a whole group of people that you're having to keep safe in the environment, in the therapy environment and around horses.
Very true. And, you know, safety is such a big key. And I know, Jennifer, we talked a lot about first impressions, like the signage and answering emails and Facebook and phone calls and things on the marketing side, too. So I think, Laura, with you, let's get a little bit more specific about arena and trail and tack room and actual horses and how they look and their welfare and how they're being groomed and taken care of and feed on the ground and all those things, if you don't mind. We'll kind of go down a little bit more detailed road as Jennifer was more big picture. So our first question is, first impressions are a big deal. So when somebody is coming up to a barn that you are a part of, what are some of the things on the management side that you really like to have in place?
Well, as the equine manager, one of my biggest pet peeves is to pull up into a new facility and the horses out in the pasture with saddle marks on them. I think it's very important to look like your horse is standing in the pasture. Don't look like they've been ridden hard and put up wet. You want them to stand in the pasture, groomed and relaxed, and look very well taken care of. And so that would be one of my first things, is how does the horse look? Is everything cleaned up in cleanliness? Do you know where to go when you get in? I know that Jen touched on that earlier. One of our biggest things is having signs up for where our volunteers park, where our clients park, and then being able to find the office too. And is everything clean and maintained? And the health of the horses, are your horses skinny? Are they healthy looking? It's funny, I know you guys were talking earlier about the size of horses in the pasture. Our front pasture has our ponies in it with one big horse. And then off to the right is a big Percheron gelding that we have just gotten in. And then our older horses, the ones that are harder to maintain, that are there to retire, we tend to keep those horses more on the back side of the property. They're getting fed well. They're 35 years old. But they, you know, we all know as horse people, trying to keep weight on a horse like that and them looking healthy, it's a little more difficult. So we put the harder keepers towards the back so that the first impression is when you come in, you're seeing the younger horses, the horses that are being used in the program, and then those that are retired, we have set back. And then as you learn about the care of the horses around the facility, you then learn, wow, that horse looks good. I can't believe that horse is 35 years old.
Such a great idea because, you know, even in my little neighborhood where we are, we have a lot of people that just have horses in their backyard. And we had a lady across the street that had a 35-year-old gelding. And one day I got a knock on the door and it was the local animal control saying that they had gotten a few calls. And we're getting more city-fied out here. Our school is out here close to us now. A lot of the things are being built up. And as more people come in that don't understand that, they're asking the questions. So this animal control officer didn't know much about horses either. And I had to explain, you know, they don't have many teeth left at that age. Teeth fall out and they get fed, you know, senior feed and those types of things. And I kind of explained that that horse really looks pretty fantastic for 35. So I think that's a great idea.
Yeah. They still
if they're standing, they look fantastic for 35.
Yeah, so. Absolutely.
And the fact that you work at a place that wants to retire them and have them live out their lives in a pasture is wonderful. You know, so mm-hmm. I think that that's great that you're able to do that. Very good.
We can make it about two. We have 35 acres at Victory, and the rest of them, when we go to retire them, go through a really long process of making sure we know where our horses are going, and we keep up to date on those horses that we have to retire.
Up, you're breaking up on us a bit. Are you on a cell?
Yes, I am on a cell phone.
Okay. You're coming and going a little bit here. Yeah.
Okay. So how about now? Is this better?
Yes.
It is.
Okay. So one of the things that we do is when we retire our horses, we make sure we have a good retirement program and we interview the people we're retiring our horses to.
Yeah, I love that. So let's move on then. So this person has just come to the barn. They've seen everything. They've gone to the office. They've done all of that. What does your grooming and saddling area look like where they're actually going to be doing those things? What are some things that are do's and don'ts in that area?
So we've got a really organized area. All of our horses have their own buckets. It's labeled with a little detail and information about the horse on it. And then they all have their own grooming stuff, and they're all set up in a box area where they can be found easily. And then the halters all are hung along the wall, and because we're working with volunteers that don't always know the horse's picture with their name are hanging above the halters, along with their name being on the halters. We also have a map of the facility laying out where you know where to find that horse when it's in the pasture where it's located.
I love that detail. So how about your tack room? Is it just as detailed as well?
Yes, the tack room is detailed the same way. All the tack is lined up and organized. We have a book that explains what tack can be used on which horses.
And how often do you do a tack check, like actually physically check the tack for wear and tear?
I go through all of our tack once a week, but every instructor, every time they put a client on a horse or them themselves climb on a horse, they check their tack. The check is that everybody goes through full safety checks before mounting a rider on their horse.
And I'll tell you, there's nothing like the smell of leather when it's been cleaned and polished when you walk into a tack room mm-hmm. versus smelling stinky, yes. disgusting horse sweat on the bottom of pads. Right? There's just something
exactly.
about it. It's like, oh, this place takes care of their equipment. This is wonderful.
So we have a vacuum cleaner and a metal curry comb that we use to clean our Western pads with.
See, that's really good. So once,
And then a washer and dryer there too. So,
oh, very good. Yes. Cause that's one thing. Yeah. My husband does not like it when I take my dressage pads and I take my blankets and I put them in our personal washer. He doesn't think that that's very good. So having your own there at the bar, that its own entity, is wonderful.
Exactly. Yes.
So now Good. And the clients can help.
Actually, a lot of times the clients help with that, but the volunteers love the clean tack.
Yeah, it is a very relaxing thing to do, and boy, does it make a difference. Mm-hmm. So now that we've talked about the grooming area and the tack room, what do you like in your arenas? What do you make sure that is set up so that the clients know that their safety is being paid attention to and what have you?
Well, we have our fencing and make sure our fencing is in good repair and in good shape. The other thing we have is we have an in and out gate to get into our arena. We deal with a mounting area because we've got ramps and stuff like that for our clients that are in wheelchairs to get on. So it's very important that the traffic flow in and out of the arena is safe, and that the gates are easy to open and close. The other thing is we want our equipment, if it's being used, you know, you put it out when you're going to use it and you put it away when you're done. So that it's ready for the next instructor. Now, sometimes we do leave the same course set up or the same trail pattern set up if we're all working on the same type of pattern or getting ready for a horse show. And so we have three different arenas. We have the indoor arena, an outdoor arena, and then we have a smaller arena back in the back. So typically, if we're setting up the trail pattern, we set it up in one arena so that the other arenas are available to do other other things that we are working on.
And that's such a good idea. You'll see that sometimes at jumping barns too. Well, they'll have one arena that's set up all the time with the jumps, and then the others can be used for flat work, because it's sometimes pretty dangerous with beginners to do flat work around the jumps, just like it would be in your field to be doing some of your more, we're not going to use the obstacles today, with obstacles in the arena. So I'm glad that you have a separate area for that. Now, we all have pet peeves. Jen, Glenn, and I were talking about those earlier. What are some of your particular pet peeves as a horse professional and some solutions to solve those?
Well, people not cleaning up after themselves, you know. So that is a big one. You have to clean up after yourself. You have to help clean up after each other. So we like to put out signs that says, your mom does not live here, you need to clean up after yourself. you know, we're not going to pick up your, you know, this is not a place for you to just come and leave your stuff laying out. You have to clean up. And that's why the clients get involved too. The clients, the volunteers, all the instructors, you know, at the end of the day, and you put in an 8-hour day, the last thing you want to have to do is go around and throw away 20 water bottles.
Absolutely.
You know, that are half strength out of.
That's right. And people will do that sometimes and leave their stuff around. What are some pet peeves in regards to horse handling that you have?
I don't like my horses being drugged. I like you to walk with your horse, like it's your friend, and lead it up so that you're working as a partnership and you're working on a friendship and a relationship with your horse versus going dragging the horse up. If you're dragging it, okay, there may be something wrong with the horse. You know, what's going on with the horse today? Is it not feeling well? You know, you want them to step up and walk with you and not be drug around. Or just not paying full attention and engaging to this animal that wants to have a relationship with you. Or is, you know, they like people and they like being around people a lot of times. And so you want them to be engaged with whoever is leading them. It cuts down on horses biting you because then they're not behind you. It keeps you from getting run over and also helps keep you from getting stepped on.
Absolutely. And it does take a very special horse to be a therapy horse because of all of that personal space kind of goes away. If the horse has a big bubble, you know, some people have a big bubble, so do horses. And in therapy, their bubble, boy, it gets invaded all the time by sidewalkers, leaders, what have you.
Exactly. So for every 10 horses that I bring in to try and see if they'll work as a therapy horse, a lot of times I end up only keeping one or two of the 10 that may come in.
So we always talk about dollars. You know, it costs a lot to feed these guys and maintain and keep everything going. What are some low budget ways to make things look great at your barn that you've come up with?
Okay. one of the things that I tend to do is if something needs to be fixed or like hang a bucket on the fence, I try not to let people use baling twine. I'm like, yeah, no, baling twine is so not okay.
Baling twine and duct tape. Come on,
it's
Jennifer.
Not safe. It won't break. And it doesn't look good. So I'll tend to use a bungee cord in that situation or, you know, something that I know can give, you know, or that will come loose. Making sure one of the ways that we, big ways we're saving money on hay, very, very big way we're saving money on hay, is that we have gone to using, there are metal containers that you put that water is carried in on back of the trucks, and they use them a lot in farming community. Well, we've taken the plastic containers out of there, and then there's big open squares. We have now put hay nets inside of them, and it contains our hay and keeps our hay and makes it a slow feeder. So the horses have constant access to hay, yet it costs us $10 to $15 to implement that versus going out and buying a $200 slow feeder, hay feeder.
That's a good idea because, boy, is there a lot of waste, especially in the winter if you're feeding outside and they're stepping on it and getting it all in the mud and what have you. So those are some really good ideas.
It's been a really big cost saver because before we were throwing hay out and we might would have to throw out several bales of hay a day. We're cut down to, if we have 4 to 5 horses in the pasture, at the most using 2 bales, 1.5 to 2 bales of hay. Not only that, it keeps it cleaner. It's not as muddy, and there's not the waste of the horses stepping and going to the bathroom in the hay.
So if you could impart to our listeners, and we'll do a do as well, but your biggest don't, like one or two things that just really are like, oh, please don't do this around your barn, whether it's the tack room, on the trail, in the arena, in your grooming space, what would those be?
Don't leave a mess. It's very important that it.
There's a theme
safe.
Here.
Don't leave a mess. Clean up after yourself. Put it away. Make sure it's organized. It's just like when you've got two instructors standing there and you've got the one that's very professionally dressed and then you've got the one standing there in sweats and their hair is not brushed and they look like they rolled out of bed. Although that person may be ultimately the better instructor and have the more experience, the one that's dressed professionally and organized and kept clean is the one that people are going to gravitate to want to pay, you know, to teach you. Because you're going to go, that person's got it together. And so that first impression, when we're taught in any line of business, first impression's important. So if your barn looks clean and organized and you look clean and organized and everything looks put together, you're going to have a more successful situation.
I'll tell you, I once met a wonderful man, very funny, came to our conference a few times and spoke for us. His name is Daniel Stewart. And Daniel always wears white jeans. And I am just in awe that those white jeans at the beginning of when he teaches and at the end of when he teaches are never dirty. Wow. I try really hard to wear the polo shirt and tuck stuff in and look professional, but I cannot wear white. I would be a mess wore white.
I would be brown by the end of the day.
Absolutely. Yes. And I'll tell you what else I want, Laura. I want you to come over to my house and get my boys in shape because, the whole mess thing is part of my life on a daily basis with two young little men in my house. So you want to come over and start working on that for me? That'd be great.
Well, wait. There has to be a horse involved because my house is nowhere near as clean as my barn.
Oh, there you go. And isn't that always the truth? The barn is cleaner than nicer than where we live. Yes, that's a very typical thing.
Yes.
For sure. So where do people find you, Laura, if they want to hunt you down and learn more about you and your program?
Okay. Well, the best way to reach me personally is going to the CHA website and looking under instructors. You can find me on the CHA website and go under instructors and just type in Laura Hamron. And then if you're looking for me where I work, and that would be Victory Therapy Center, it's victorytherapycenter.org. And all my information is on there too as to how to reach me there. Our website, and we'd love for everybody to come out and visit us since we're doing out at Victory Therapy Center. It is an absolutely beautiful arena and facility.
And can you explain, Texas is so big, can you explain where in Texas you're located?
We are located north of Fort Worth. So it would be, we're northeast of, northwest of Dallas, but due north of Fort Worth, between Fort Worth and Denton.
Very good. Well, it was so great to have you on today, Laura, and we really appreciate all your time, and thank you.
All right. Thank you very much, Chrissy. Hope to see you soon. You guys all take care.
Well, there you go. I think we've covered about all of it today.
Well, and I'll tell you, one of the big things...
We could come up with about 100 more pet peeves, but...
Well, but, you know, the whole urban concept, I think I kind of want to just leave everybody with this note. For whether you're the listener and the horse user or whether you're the professional, you know, things are changing. We're not all living on farms anymore. I mean, they're thinking of going to year-round school out here in Colorado, which used to be such a farming community. And we did year-round school because the kids had to be home during harvest. Well, we don't harvest anymore. So now they're thinking, well, let's do year-round school to keep the minds right. And brains active. So things are changing. And that includes our livestock industry, which, of course, horses are included as a part of that. And we do need to really pay attention to animal welfare and how our animals look, and educating people on the older horse, like what Laura brought up, and educating people on this is actually okay sometimes to use a stud chain, and this is why we use it, this is how we use it, not, ooh, she's bringing out a big long lunge whip. What are you going to beat the horse? No, I actually never touch the horse with my lunge whip. It's used for direction and whatever. So I think the education part is so key, and we all just need to do more of that as we move ahead.
We had the same situation here in our neighborhood where you turn, we're an equestrian neighborhood, but where you turn to come in, there's a paddock right along the road, and he had two horses in there, and a very old one, and then a younger one that looked fine, but the old one always looked skinny and sick because it was really old. And he used to get calls all the time. People used to stop. People would call. The Humane Society would come out. You know, they finally figured it out. And then one day I saw that the oldster wasn't there anymore. And I thought, well, he's probably getting less calls now.
But, you know, in his defense, right, he was doing the right thing probably by that horse, too. And they always had food.
I mean, they always had food. Yeah.
Sure. And then in the people's defense that are stopping by, they honestly just don't know. They think, oh, my gosh, this guy's not taking care of
it. It happens all the time when people drive by and see a horse laying down on the field. You know, it happens all the time that way, too, thinking the horse is dead. And I got to admit, even us horse people, where we're driving by and we see three or four laying down, especially if they're laying flat out, we all look, don't we?
Twice. Yes, we do.
So you can see why a non-horse person would think something's drastically wrong. Especially when we see them all laying down at the same time.
Well, people really love the horses, though, want to be a part of it. You know, the more research that we do and the more surveys we do, it comes back that at least 1/3 of the American population wants to interact with horses. We just need to make it accessible, safe, and fun for them. So,
yeah, think with My Little Pony being so popular, there'd be more little girls wanting to be involved with horses and not
That's
soccer.
Right.
But I don't know. Soccer doesn't have its own My Little Pony show.
But so I'll tell you, the soccer fields, we have this arena near my house in Fullerton, California, very, very urban place. And every time I go home to visit my parents, I keep thinking, is it a soccer field yet? No, it's still arena. Yay, it's still an arena.
Well, thank you, Christy, for putting this together. We really appreciate it. Of course, if you want to listen to past episodes of the Certified Horsemanship Association episode, you can go back to horsesinthemorning.com and just search for CHA or Certified Horsemanship. It'll bring up all the past episodes. We do it the third Tuesday of every month. And you can find the CHA at
chainstructorswithans.com.
Jennifer did post links to some of the things we were talking about today, including all those videos, instructional videos, the new ones and the old ones that are there. So you can find that on our Horses in the Morning page. Anything else? Did we miss anything?
I think we're pretty good, Glenn. I'll tell you, the next time I talk to you is going to be after Valentine's Day. So
So what's
wear
that
your
mean?
Red. Do something special for Jen, okay?
Okay, I will. Now, is that coming up already?
Yes, February 14th.
Jeez.
I know, it's less than a month away. It's crazy.
Thanks for reminding me.
You're welcome. Anytime.
Can you also remind me on the 13th?
That'd I will. I'll text you.
Yeah, text me. That'd be great. Thank you so much. Appreciate that. We'll see everybody. We'll be back tomorrow morning here on Horses in the Morning, 9 a.m. Eastern. Jamie will be here. And we have a special guest going to be joining us in studio for the show. That should be a lot of fun. Let's see you tomorrow. Oh, wrong. I do that every day.
Bye.
There we go. That's the right stuff. See you, Christy.
Bye, Glenn. Bye, Jen. Have a good rest of your week.